I struggled with anxiety and depression since high school, and it got really bad in college because I feel like I wasn't seeing the people that I loved all the time anymore, and I was just living a life that I didn't enjoy. I was so upset. I remember walking to class one day on my way to a lecture. I just broke down in tears and just skipped class, ran across campus, and found just an isolated bench and just cried out to the Lord. And really, man, like, you know, like you said, you didn't really have Christ in your life till you went to college. Like, it's kind of similar for me, man. Like, you know, I went to church ever since I was a kid. I was in the praise band. I was in, you know, the active in the youth group. I was, you know, all this stuff. But, you know, I guess my relationship with God, I thought, you know, well, my mom's so close with the Lord. And like, I don't know, man, it's so weird. Like, I definitely went to church and just kind of was a good kid and just kind of lived life. But I didn't have a relationship with the Lord, you know, and it was that day in college that I really, really cried out to him, like really for the first time in my mind, you know, looking back on it.
You are now listening to Testimonies with Terry.
Hey, what's up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of Testimonies with Terry. I'm your host, Terry Skiggs, and it was really cool connecting with my guest on this week's episode, not only because he's an amazing man with an awesome testimony, but all the similarities that him and I share as well. We both love basketball, even though neither one of us are really good at it. We both grew up as huge fans of the band Kiss. We both love rock and roll in general, and most importantly, we both love Jesus. You're going to hear his story of growing up in the church, but coming to a point in life in college where he had to stop living off his family's faith and develop his own relationship with Christ himself. He takes us through the formation of his band, The Protest, and what a blessing it's been to be in a rock and roll missionary band with his best friends for over a decade. He also gets super candid about mental health struggles that he's battled throughout his life and how coming to understand his identity in Christ has led him to no longer have suicidal thoughts. This was a super cool chat, guys. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, this is Josh Bramlett's testimony. All right, guys. Well, I am here with the lead singer of The Protest, as well as one half of the Quiet Strength Design Team, Josh Bramlett. Josh, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Oh, man, it's an absolute honor. Dude, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, man, this is a real treat for me. I've been a fan of The Protest for a while, and then to be able to kind of connect with you over the last year, you know, I had you and your brother Jarob design a shirt for me that I used to sell to raise funds for my sister-in-law who is going through cancer at the time. And so those of you who are watching and listening, if you bought that shirt, this is the guy who designed it, him and his brother. Thank you again so much. You know, I've been able to share the testimony of my sister-in-law now being healed of cancer and just God's provision through the whole thing. But thank you again for lending your time and your skills for designing that shirt. It was just really cool.
Dude, I'm beyond stoked to hear that she's cancer free. And that's amazing, man. And yeah, it's truly, truly, truly our honor. The credit, you know, definitely does not go to me. Jarob is I'm the mouthpiece, you know. Jarob's the artist. He's the guy doing it. So, man, we're always humbled, especially to do stuff like that. So,
yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to having you guys do some more work for me. But yeah, man, this is a really cool opportunity to get to know you more and to kind of build a relationship and our friendship here, man. So we always on the podcast, we always start way at the beginning. So Josh, take us back and tell us, where did you grow up and what was family life like for you as you were growing up?
Yeah, man. I was born and raised in East Central Indiana. I'm still living there now. you know, man, I was so blessed. Like I was born in a home, a very, very loving home. You know, my mom and dad, followed Christ. My mom was very active in our church. And since I can remember, she would drag us to church, you know, we had no choice, you know what I mean? And when you're a kid, you're like bummed out about that. But then you look back and you're like, man, we're so blessed to have parents that, you know, at an early age showed us who Jesus was. I have a older sister. She's 3 years older, and obviously a younger brother who's more talented and more handsome than I am. And he's our drummer, and he is my business partner. He's my best friend. Yeah. And my sister, she lives close by. She's got three beautiful girls. I get to see them all the time. Jarob has a little girl. I just had a little girl. So it's yeah, man, it's been good. But yeah, I guess starting back, my had a great family life, super close with everyone, still am. I mean, you know, best friends. So, you know, I know a lot of people don't have that. And that's something that I look back on now very fondly. And that's something that I do not take for granted. Like, you know, just it could have been so different. You know, I had such good God-loving people in my life who have supported me for a long time. I mean, when you hear your son wants to be in a rock band for his living, that's not something that most parents want to hear, but they've been awesome. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, like you said, man, not everyone is blessed to kind of have that upbringing. But like you said, like even to this day, you and your family are still super tight. And I work as a marriage and family therapist. And yeah, that's obviously not everybody's story as they get older. You know, sometimes they grow apart from their siblings. Sometimes, you know, stuff with parents kind of becomes an issue.
Sure.
Hasn't been the case so much for you. What do you think has been the key for you maintaining such a close-knit relationship with your family, Josh?
Yeah, man. Well, first of all, that's really cool. I didn't know that you did that for a profession. That's super cool, man. You know, thanks for all your hard work in that. That's really special. I think for us, like, we've just always been just incredibly open with each other. My parents trusted us a lot, even though, you know, I mean, even as good kids, you know, we still did a lot of bad things. You know what I mean? Like we stayed out too late or did this or did that. And, you know, but they just trusted us. And I think the principles that we were the values and a life in Christ that we were taught, thanks to them getting us there, was everything. You know, like we realized that like that love that we have for each other is so, so special, and so important. And yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us would be, I mean, I could not survive if I didn't, you know, like almost all my friends moved to Nashville. Like a lot of my friends are in Nashville now. You know what I mean? There's a time where I thought about it because that's where, you know, things were going and everyone was going there. And that's where, you know, but I love my family so much, man. I love them so much. They like my daughter gets to see them like every day almost, you know, it's super cool. It's hard to say exactly like this is the reason, but I would just say, you know, just mom and dad, they were really young parents. So like, you know, I had my first kid. I'm at 32, you know, mom and dad were like 19 and 20 when they had my sister. And, you know, so, I mean, they were kids, and I think that really lent my dad, like, you know, his dad was an amazing man, but much, much older than he was, you know? So I think my dad really was like, I'm going to like, you know, I'm young, I'm going to play hard with these kids and spend as much time with them as I can. And so into them. And, you know, I think that's what, you know, what was everything. And then, you know, with my sister and my brother, like, it's the same thing. Like we just kind of so into each other's lives, and it's just, man, it's so humbling and cool to just, yeah, I love my family so much, man. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. What a gift, man. What a gift. What was it like absolutely. For you being the middle child growing up? You know, again, as a marriage and family therapist, there's always this stereotype of the middle child. So what was your experience, Josh, of being the middle child?
Bro, I am a typical middle child. Like I if you ask my mom, I was the most troubled of all the kids. I was the most emotional, hard-headed, the most concerned, the most introspective, kind of angry, brooding kind of kid. And I think it's still that way to a certain degree. You know, and we'll get into this later, but you know, I've struggled with mental health my whole life, and you know, I was treated great. My family is amazing, and I would even say that my mom has a really special place for me because I am the middle kid. So you know, so that kind of works out. But I don't know, man. It was a cool place to be in because I got to be a freshman in high school when my sister was a senior, and then I got to be a junior in high school when my brother was a freshman. And it's just cool to kind of have that relationship, you know?
Yeah, for sure, man. So speaking of school, what was school like for you growing up? Were you someone who exceeded and did well, or was school a struggle for you throughout your upbringing?
Yeah, dude. I was a extremely average kid. So my whole life I was into basketball big time. It took me until I think sixth grade to realize, oh, I'm an unathletic white kid from a very, very small town. I'm probably not going to make it in the NBA. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that was a hard dream that died, but no, I did okay in school, man. I looking back on it, I could have applied myself a lot better, but I mean, I did fine, you know. I think from, you know, early on, I did a lot more leadership type things than I did academic things. So I think, and it's really cool because it sort of feeds into what I do now, but, I'm not a big farm guy, but we're in a big farm area, and I got really into the FFA in middle school and high school, not necessarily the actual agricultural part, but all the leadership part. So I did a ton of public speaking. I did parliamentary procedure, which is running business, and I did all these things. I don't know why. I think I started off following a girl that I thought was cute into FFA.
Classic.
And I just kind of stayed there. Yeah, all right. So I did a lot of leadership things like that. That really taught me some valuable lessons, just on how to speak and, you know, how to be comfortable with speaking with crowds and stuff like that. So super, super humbled by that. But yeah, school, no one ever accused me of being a whiz kid. Trust me. Like I was I did fine enough, you know?
Right.
I was the big daydreamer, man. So, because after the NBA dream died, that's about when I discovered rock and roll. And so I went from imagining myself, you know, dunking it on some dude in the pros to standing on my bed with a broomstick rocking out. You know what
right?
I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah. I was going to ask about, you know, you're not really a farm kid. So how did you get involved in FFA? But yeah, the girl, I mean, that explains it. I've been guilty of doing the same.
Yeah. Yes. This girl I thought was really cute, was really into it. And I went, and then even after nothing ever came from it. I just really liked it. So I stayed, you know what I mean? And was into FFA, big time. And I'm so glad that I was, man. It taught me a lot of things, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's like you said, it's cool how God used that, right? He used that to start to craft those skills of public speaking and getting comfortable with the crowd and knowing how to work a crowd, all things that you
Absolutely.
Do now.
Right. Yeah, dude, totally. I would have never thought that those things would ever tie together. It's really cool how God, you know, is the great orchestrator. You know, things are being moved and, you know, put into motion to where you look back and you're like, oh my gosh, I see what you did there, God. That is so cool, you know?
Yep. Yeah, for sure, man. You mentioned, yeah, unfortunately, white man can't jump, you know, that basketball dream ended. Growing up in Indiana then, I got to imagine you were a Pacers fan?
Bro, look at this.
Oh, rocking it. You're rocking it right now.
I'm wearing a Pacers shirt right now. Dude, I'm a huge, huge Pacers fan. Like, I have been since I was a little boy. I mean, like, Reggie Miller is, like, my hero. And I've been an avid, really, me and all the guys, like, are avid Pacer fans. We watch as many games as we can. I try to get to a couple each year. I'm, like, really, really into the Pacers, man. And, like, yeah. I still love basketball. I'm not very good. I'm definitely not athletic. I just love to play. And yeah, I love watching the game. And I will say this, man. I've always liked me some Timberwolves, too. So,
oh, there we go.
So, good work there, you know.
Right,
you guys have a really good team this year.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that at the time of this recording, we got the best record in the Western Conference.
I know, dude, and that makes me so happy. Like, because it's been, I think it's been, you made the playoffs with Cat, but you haven't won a series with Cat yet, I don't think, right?
So, no, we haven't won a playoff series, I think, since like Kevin Garnett and Latrell Sprewell.
Yeah, that squad was legit. I love that squad, dude. Wally Zerbiak. Sprewell, Sam Cassell, come on, dude.
Yeah, you got it.
Dude, I'm a big, big pro basketball fan. I mean, yeah, that's kind of an Indiana thing. Like, I grew up, you know that movie Hoosiers with Gene Hackman?
Oh, yeah.
It's like classic. You know, I grew up about 30 minutes from that gym. I played in that gym. And it's a very basketball state out here, you know?
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, that's cool. We got that in common. I'm a huge basketball fan myself. For a couple years in school, but wasn't really good. Still just enjoyed, you know, just doing pickup games and whatnot. But I think we're around the same age. So I was going to ask, you know, because I grew up, obviously, when I was watching the NBA, the Pacers, Reggie Miller, Rick Smits, I think Detlef Schrempf was there. Dale Davis. Detlef Yep. And then, you know, he transitioned into the Jamal Tinsleys and the Jermaine O'Neals and all. They're on our test, the Malice at the Palace.
Oh, yeah. That one set us back. We would have won the championship that year, but that's all right.
sore subject. Sorry to bring that up.
No, it's okay, man. It's just, you know, it's a, you know, I got to move on. It's been 20 years, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, man, like you said, once that basketball dream kind of died, you went right into the rock and roll dream. And again, another thing that I think is pretty cool that connects both of us is that I've heard in other interviews that you were a huge Kiss fan. And dude, growing up, I can't tell you how big of a Kiss fan I was. Like 5 years old, reunion tour was starting to happen. My mom and all of her siblings were super stoked. And so they went out and bought, you know, all the CDs that were being remastered and the VHSs. And that's how I fell in love with Kiss. You know, these were superheroes come to life in my mind. So talk to us how did you come to just get exposed to Kiss and what kind of impact have they had on your life?
Yeah, dude, it's so funny. Like, whenever I do these interviews, it's like, you know, I can't say like, you know, oh, the Lord used Kiss as a vessel to speak to me. Cause you know, if you listen to their music and you read their lyrics, like there's really nothing real redeeming about their stuff. But I think I will tell you this, if it wasn't for Kiss, I would definitely be in ministry, but if it wasn't for Kiss, I would not be in rock and roll ministry. That's for sure. Because, you know, just like you, man. So I'm in fifth grade, right? And we have some neighbors that live down the street, and their dad is like the Kiss fan. Like, I mean, you'll never meet anyone that's a bigger Kiss fan than this guy. Unbelievable. So naturally, his sons, they were like, you know, they're like our best friends. They live one house down. So we would just go over there all the time, and we would just see all this memorabilia, the comic books, the action figures, the posters, and the same thing that you said, man. Like, I'm like, before I even knew they were a band, I just thought they were like heroes, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was blown away. And then we started listening to their music, and I just loved the like raw energy of their music. And I love the theatrics and I got really, really into Kiss. Like, and I'm still a big Kiss fan. You know, like I have a Paul Stanley tattoo on my back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, because it's really more of like a bro tat thing. Like I love Kiss, not enough to get them tattooed on me, but my brother and then two of our best friends ever, like that's a bond that we had, was like, it meant a lot more than just Kiss. It's like this bond that we had and have, and their father, who kind of introduced us all to Kiss, passed away, somewhat recently. So yeah, so I've got Paul Stanley on my back. Jerob has Peter Criss on his ankle. They're just their little symbols, and then our other buddies have Ace and Gene. So,
cool.
But yeah. So from Kiss, you know, you start finding out about more classic rock bands. Then you start finding out about like, oh, like I love 80s hair metal now. I love Dokken and Rat and Poison, and oh, Iron Maiden's cool. They're pretty heavy. Oh my gosh, who's this? Metallica, that's really heavy. And then you just kind of go from there. It really wasn't until high school, man, like Christian rock for me growing up in the church, like heavy Christian rock was like Peter Furler Newsboys and DC Talk. Like I didn't really, like I didn't know that whole underground scene of like awesome heavy bands back then. Like I just wasn't exposed to it. And then the heavy bands I did like that were Christian bands were like Striper and Blood Good and White Cross, which those bands are awesome and they're all really good guys.
Love them.
You know what I mean? But yeah, it wasn't until, honestly, man, it was in high school. And I remember our bass player, who was older than us and he was in our band, he always talked about this band called Disciple, because he knew them. They're from his area. And I didn't like them at all. I hated their music. I thought they were too heavy. You know, Kevin was screaming and I was like, man, I will never scream. That's just, I don't like this at all. So when I got into Skillet with the Comatose record, and they were coming to town, and Disciple was opening up for them. And I went there to see Skillet. And of course they're amazing. And John is like one of the best guys on earth. But I left there Disciple fan. And if you've listened to our music, then you can definitely tell that Disciple was a big inspiration to us. Like, you know, here, you know, I see this band that is absolutely the spirit of rock and roll, tearing it up, but they're doing it to bring honor to his name and his kingdom. And that was just, you know, that was a big turning point for us. My pastor shared a verse with me. This is also tattooed on my arm. 1 Peter 4:10. Everyone should use whatever gift they've been given to serve others and faithfully administer God's grace in its various forms. And that verse just struck me, man. You know,
yeah.
Everybody has something to bring to the kingdom. Everybody, like, you know, mine happens to be, you know, the gift of music, you know, but there are so many amazing teachers and evangelists and people who, you know, like just have the gift of sharing, or maybe they're good writers or good, you know, whatever. That's the beautiful thing about following him, is like, if you commit whatever work you do to him, you know what I mean? Like amazing things can happen. So I think, you know, Kiss and classic rock still has a very fond place in my heart, you know, but it was seeing the Disciple guys probably that made me like, okay, I think this is what I want to do, like for him, you know, because, yeah, you know, cause up until that point, I just wanted to be in a rock band. I wanted to be a rock star, like, you know, like Kiss. I had no aspirations of doing it for anyone besides just the fun of playing rock and roll music. So having that purpose changed everything.
For sure, man. For sure. Another cool parallel there is, so I didn't grow up in the church. I didn't get saved till I was in college. And when I was first exposed to Christian rock, I had a negative view of it. I thought, you know, it was lame, it was soft or whatever. And then I heard I heard Disciple and then I heard Skillet, and both those bands completely changed my mind. Been huge fan of them and Christian rock since then. So cool how, you know, those two bands have played a pretty big role in both of our lives. But you mentioned, you know, the band starting. And so let's get into that. Like at what age, Josh, did you actually start pursuing music, and maybe even like, did you recognize that, hey, like I can sing, you know, I can actually do this?
Sure. Great. That's a great question. So, we're, again, man, our band's kind of an anomaly. We're very, very blessed by it. Like it's been the same lineup for a very, like forever, pretty much. We all went to school together. So kind of how it started, you know, we got into Kiss. Therefore I wanted a guitar, you know, Jarob wanted a drum kit, you know, so we'd go up in his room. We did not know how to play. We thought we did. You know, so we'd throw on Deuce or Strutter. We'd play along to it. We're not really playing along to it. You know how that is. Like, complete noise, trash. But, so I'm in middle school, and Sarge, our lead guitar player, he was in high school at the time, at the same school. I didn't know him, but my dad's a high school teacher. And Adam was kind of known around the school for being a good guitar player. Like, he played the national anthem at one of the basketball games. Like, he does the talent shows, and him and my dad kind of became buddies. And he asked if he would teach me how, you know, how to play guitar. And, you know, up until that point, I had tried lessons so many times, but I just, you know, I was going in with an acoustic guitar and guys were teaching a 10-year-old theory, and I did not know what was going on. It was not fun for me. You know, Adam Sarge comes over to my house. I'm in seventh grade. And he teaches me how to play, you know, Zeppelin riffs and AC/DC riffs, and then starts kind of putting in some theory stuff. And so for whatever reason, this really cool high school guy really enjoyed hanging out with me, this weird middle school kid. And we just became fast friends. We started a little, so I started a band, with my brother and TJ, who's our other guitar player, in eighth grade. We played our first show in our science room during a dance. It was so loud and complete garbage, I'm sure. And I stared at the ground the whole time because I was nervous. I didn't sing at the time. I didn't really know I could. So we had another guy singing through a karaoke speaker. You know how it goes. And, you know, Adam was there watching. He's so proud of me and all this stuff. Well, so we keep the band going. Me and my brother and Adam start a little side project with another guy called Aces and Eights. And we're just a complete cover band. You know, we're playing Priest and Quiet Riot and stuff. And we're playing bars on the weekends, and I'm like a freshman in high school, and we're like, so like, you know, Jarob and I were only allowed like on stage, and then as soon as we were done or before, we could not even be like on the premises, you know. So it was a really funny kind of growing up. but then the main band, Protest for Pluto, we were called, we started getting kind of serious, you know. We started thinking about taking it more serious, kind of as a career option, maybe. I was getting close, you know, we're playing shows every weekend. My senior year of high school, so sorry, I'm kind of all over the place. But
no, you're good, man.
When Adam graduated high school, he went to LA to study music, and he studied guitar, and he lived out in California for a while. That's where he met his wife, who he's married to now. And you know, he was kind of out of our lives for a couple of years. I talked to him almost every day. He's still my best friend. But we decided, because I started singing in high school, I started singing for the band in high school, because we lost a singer, and I was just going to fill in till we found someone else. And it turned out I liked it. And I was playing lead guitar as well. And Adam was so much better than me. And we were like, man, it'd be really cool if he joined the band. But, you know, he's in L.A. So we didn't know what his plans were. You know, that school he went to is famous for guys getting gigs, like good touring gigs with like big artists, you know, like Steve Vai and Joe Satriani come, you know, come through there all the time and just do clinics. And like, you know, there's pop stars that go there looking for people to come out on tour with them and play guitar. So, you know, but we kind of offered him a spot in the band, and he decided to leave LA, come back to Little Indiana and join our band. Wow. That was 2009. And since then it's been us, man. I mean, we've had some amazing, bass players come and go for, you know, different reasons, guys that we still love. But the four of us, me, Adam, Sarge, and, TJ have been in it since 2009 altogether, but been playing music, with TJ since I was in seventh or eighth grade, and playing music with Adam since I was in, you know, ninth grade. So we've been, you know, and we're best friends. We all live pretty close to each other right now. It's pretty cool, man. You know, like you've probably seen, in the industry, a lot of bands, you know, change members, lose members, and that's common and that's normal. Like, you know, we're all in our 30s now, and it's not near as easy as it used to be to just, you know, hop in a van and travel the country for months. You can't just do that. You have to be smarter about it, and you know, think about your family and, you know, how you can make your calling work while still being, you know, a good husband and a good father and keep food on the table and stuff like that. So it makes sense why a lot of people come and go in bands, but, we are so blessed to have this core. Then we're all in it for, you know, the same reasons. We have a lot of grace for each other, a lot of open, honest, you know, questions and times. And, it's truly amazing, what we have. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, man. I mean, you mentioned that word grace, and that's what came to my mind as you were describing that, is that there's a special grace over you guys. You know, like you said, the fact that since 2009, it's been you guys, you know, you haven't really gone through any big lineup changes or anything like that. And that is super, super rare in the music industry. And so to see God's grace over that, and I mean, more than that, just like the bond that God has created between you guys, right? I mean, like you said, you guys pretty much grew up all together, and here you are, you know, 15, 20 years later, still together and still making music. I mean, that's a cool story in and of itself.
It's insane. Like it runs so deep, man. Like it means so much, like this bond that we have, because like we've all sacrificed a lot, you know, and it's never going to be more than what Christ sacrificed for us. And like, it's always worth it. But like, you know, we've sacrificed a lot to do this. None of us are financially well off at all. And that's because we're doing the band, probably. Like we all have other jobs, but they have to be really, really flexible jobs, you know? We've all sacrificed. We've all missed, you know, missed birthdays and missed anniversaries and missed celebrations. And we've been in the worst, most stressful situations ever with each other. We've been in the highest, most like joyful, amazing seasons. You know, it's like we've experienced it all. You know, we've been, you know, broke down in the middle of the desert and like, you know, like how are we going to eat? How are we, you know what I mean? And like, but we've been in front of thousands, you know, I mean, looking at each other saying like, wow, like this is crazy what, you know, what God is doing. You know, there's nights that we played for like one person, literally one person, you know what I mean? Or the venue owner, like that's it, you know? And then you turn around and there's nights you're playing for hundreds or thousands and you're like, you know, so it's when you experience all these things with men that you grew up together, you kind of helped raise each other. Like Jarob, he didn't get a chance to go to college. We plucked him out of high school where Susie graduated and we were traveling the country. You know what I mean? So like we kind of raised each other, man. We're super close and it's an honor to work with these guys.
Yeah, man. You mentioned, Jarob never really went to college. And I was going to ask you that, you know, once you graduated, what did life look like for you then? Like, was it just I'm going to chase this rock star dream? Or did you go to college? What did that look like?
Yeah. That's a great question. So yeah. You know, I wanted to play music for sure. So the band continued when I was in college. Almost every weekend we had gigs, you know, and I'd be, you know, I went to college close to home. So I'd be back at home practicing and stuff all the time. I went to college because that's what I thought I had to do. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
I thought that's what you're supposed to do, right? Like, and I studied business because I was like, well, I need to be safe. You know, I need to have a backup plan if music doesn't work out. So I'm gonna do this. But man, I was miserable there. I was miserable. And it was a great school, great people. Met a lot of good friends there, but I was just miserable, dude. I wasn't, the whole time I wanted to be, doing music ministry full time. But here I was going to these classes that I just didn't, I didn't care for. And I was like, I got so like, I struggled with anxiety and depression since high school, and it got really bad in college because I feel like I wasn't seeing the people that I loved all the time anymore. And I was not living in what, I was just living a life that I didn't enjoy. I was so upset. I remember walking to class one day on my way to a lecture. I just broke down in tears, and just skipped class, ran across campus and found just an isolated bench and just cried out to the Lord. And really, man, you said, you didn't really have Christ in your life till you went to college. Like, it's kind of similar for me, man. Like, you know, I went to church ever since I was a kid. I was in the praise band. I was in, active in the youth group. I was, all this stuff. But, I guess my relationship with God, I thought, my mom's so close with the Lord. And like, I don't know, man, it's so weird. Like, I definitely went to church and just kind of was a good kid and just kind of lived life. But I didn't have a relationship with the Lord, And
yeah,
it was that day in college that I really, really cried out to him, like really for the first time in my mind, looking back on it. And that very day, it was put on my heart to, leave school maybe. So I prayed and talked to my parents and talked to this professor who he passed away now, but a dear friend, a guy that I respected so much. He was my, marketing prof and a prof for my general business classes. And him and I had a lot of good banter, and he was just a good friend of mine. And, he makes money from guys like me going to school, right?
Right.
I sat down in his office, and I didn't really know he was a Christian because we never got that, that deep in class. And I started crying a little bit because it was a big decision. And I just said, man, like, here it is. I feel called to do this. What do you think? And a guy that's in his 50s, who's a teacher that, again, gets paid for you going to that school, what every reason to say, man, you should stay in school. Like, I think this is a great idea, but just stay in school to be safe. And he said, man, it sounds like if the Lord's calling you, then you should do it, and that was huge for me, man, And then my parents too, my parents, they were totally supportive, which is crazy. Cause like, we had this deal worked out. I feel really bad about this still. They give me a hard time about this still. It's hilarious, but we had this deal. You pay for the, we will pay for the first 2 years of your school and you'll pay for the last two. Right. So I went 2 years and then I quit. So,
that's a good deal for you.
I'm bad about that one. Yeah. It worked out for me. No, man. So that's kind of what happened, dude. I moved back home, got a job, seal coating, parking lots. And then I got a job as a lifeguard and was a lifeguard forever. Worked. I learned how to teach lifeguards and teach CPR. I became like the director of a pool here, in town. And I did that pretty much all the way up until I started the graphic design company with my brother. Cause it was very, very flexible. I made the schedule so I could you know, I was in charge of a lot of teenagers and stuff, but I essentially, if I played my cards right, I could, you know, I could tour for weeks or months or whatever, as long as I got the schedule filled and stuff. So, and it was always really cool because God always came through on that too, you know?
Yeah, man. Very cool. Very cool. It sounds like that was a defining moment for you, that moment on that bench where, you know, you, you made that relationship with Christ personal. And it sounds like, tell me if I'm wrong, Josh, but it sounds like, I mean, like you said, you grew up in the church, but would you say that you were up until that point on that bench, would you say that you were kind of living off your family's faith?
100%, man. 100%. Like, absolutely. You know, so yeah, like that was the first real big defining moment, like faith-wise in my life. The second came years later. So I mentioned, so starting in early high school, I, you know, call it middle kid thing or whatever. I just started to feel like so much anxiety and depression. And what really brought these feelings to life was this, relationship that I had. And, you know, it's an early high school fling and it shouldn't be that big of a deal, but like my whole life, I've just taken things very seriously and very hard. I take things to heart. I wear my heart on my sleeve. My joys are so, so joyful. My lows are like incredibly low. Right. And, so this broken, relationship I had with this girl turned into this horrible depression and anxiety way after I'd forgotten about her and moved on from her and all this stuff. It just, I don't know if it was like, it created in me this feeling that I'm not good enough or whatever, but something changed. And from that day until this day, man, like I've struggled very, very badly, with anxiety, and depression, you know, very badly. It got to a point about 5 years ago, I think, that I was having a lot of thoughts about suicide. Not that I would do it. It's just, I guess I was just so tired of existing with that, with the anxiety and the pain that I had at times. It became so overwhelming that I didn't want to like kill myself. I just wanted to be with the Lord. You know what I mean? Like I was so, like, it was too much, man. Like hurting, like it hurt to exist. I couldn't explain anything. And I've always been a very, like, I've been really good about talking and, communicating, but I bottled up because I was tired of being the sad son. I was tired of being the brother that always needed someone to cry on and talk to and had all these problems and, all these mental problems where my whole family seemed like they were doing just fine. And they're always so good to listen to me and love on me, but I just got tired of having, like, tired of gushing on people all the time. So I just bottled up, and for a couple years, I just held it in this whole time. I was having thoughts of suicide and, you know, and this whole time, dude, I'm traveling the world doing what I love to do every night, preaching the gospel that I believed 110%. I was teaching a message of hope and deliverance to people every night because I believe 100% that that hope is available to everybody there, just not me. Know what I mean? And
yeah,
I lost sight somewhere, man. I lost sight of how good the Lord is to me. And I was still going out and proclaiming his name because I know he's good and I know that people need him, but I I got angry and I just kind of stopped having a relationship with the Lord. I just kind of, you know, whatever, you know what I mean? And so, you know, years went by and this was 2 years ago now. And, you know, up until that point, I had been different therapists. I'd taken all kinds of medication, all this stuff. And it was just this thing that I started to think, wow, this is just going to be the rest of my life. It's going to be like this, you know? And like, so 2 years ago, I'm so in my head, that like concentrating when people were talking to me was hard. Like doing anything was hard. I was so not there, so not present that I just like had this lack of existence where I could barely get out of bed. I did because I had work to do and I worked really hard, but I was just hated my life, man. And on paper, everything was great. No reason to hate my life. No reason to feel the way I did. Amazing wife, amazing family, awesome job. I get to travel with my friends, play music for the Lord. Like on paper, everything should have been just fine and perfect, you know?
Yeah.
But I was so in my head. I crossed traffic one day. I didn't even look. I don't know why. I didn't even look. And I was smashed. I pulled out right in front of a kid and his girlfriend. And they smashed my car. I smashed their car. There was a small moment where I thought I had just killed somebody because, you know, they're way on the other side of the road. They're in a ditch, smashed up. My car smashed up. I'm shakily running over to their car. And for that moment, I thought I'd killed somebody because I was so not present that that happened. That was kind of a wake up call. Shortly after that, my wife and I got pregnant. But she lost the baby pretty quickly. She had known for a while that she was pregnant, and she shared with me the day before my birthday. And so for one day, I thought I was going to be a dad. And then, we went in and they said that, you know, she had a miscarriage and, you know, so like my everyday stressors with the band, cause I take everything so seriously. So like the band became like this obsession of like trying to prove that I'm good enough, trying to prove that we're good enough, trying to become some big rock stars and trying to be like, become something that, you know, we should never have intended ourselves to be. And then you have this depression, this anxiety, you have this big wreck, cause I don't even know like what's going on in my head. You have this thing with my wife and the baby. And that was it, man. I had to make a change because every single day I was just not living, dude. Like I couldn't enjoy my life. I started wallowing in self-pity and it was horrible. So we prayed hard. My family prayed over me. My wife prayed over me. I found a therapist that loves the Lord and is an amazing human being. I've been seeing her for 2 years and, you know, I was always afraid to share my testimony because like one, it's not some huge, like, oh man, I was on the street strung out on drugs. You know, I was born in a Christian home, man. Like I've got amazing parents, like, and I didn't want to share because like, you know, it's progress still. It's still a work in progress. You know what I mean? And that's what I try to tell people live is like, listen guys, like I'm a sinner. I'm a flawed human being. I promise you that like you guys are going through things that I can't even understand. I know that, you know, but I'm trying to let people know that like you're going to struggle as a human being. That's how it is. And the truth is there is no hope without Jesus. And there is no getting out of those struggles or finding that peace without Jesus. We're going to continue to struggle, man. I'm still going to have moments of depression and anxiety, but now it's different, man. Now it's through my head. Like, okay, you know what? I'm a son of God. First and foremost, I'm a son of God. You know what I mean? That is everything. You strip away the band, you strip away the business, you strip away any meager achievements that I've had in my life. And I'm a child of God. So that's something I'm trying to hold on to now and seeking his kingdom first, you know, and I'm the first to say I am not great at that, you know, but my message every night is for people to understand that they can't clean themselves up without Jesus, that they're never too dirty to go, because Jesus wants you right now. You know what I mean? He wants you right now. You don't have to clean yourself up. You can't clean yourself up, you know? So I guess that's what I've learned from all this is that, and I'm very happy to say that, you know, since therapy and finding the right therapist and, you know, just having a better relationship with my father in heaven and being a dad now, like I've not had a suicidal thought in 2 years, man.
Praise God.
You know, yeah, dude. And it's amazing, brother. Like that's what the Lord can do. And like, again, I'm not saying that I am like anxiety free, depression free. I'm not, but something finally clicked in my head a little bit like, okay, God truly does have me. You know what I mean? So that's been huge, man.
For sure, man. Well, man, Josh, thank you so much for being vulnerable and transparent there. I believe that that really spoke to a lot of people there. And you mentioned how, you know, you've always been a little afraid to share your testimony because you don't have like this huge testimony or, you know, because of the fact that it's still a work in progress. But man, all of our testimonies are a work in progress, right? We're all on that process of sanctification. And, you know, sharing testimonies releases encouragement because it and it releases prophecy because it shows that, hey, God did this in the past. And God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So if he can do it for that person in the past, he can do it for you right now. And absolutely. I mean, that's what's cool about, you know, this podcast is that these will live on until his return. And so someone 10 years from now can be listening to your story right now, Josh, and have that hope of Christ just with what you said. So thank you for being so open and vulnerable there. And it sounds like a big key for you, man, was really starting to understand your identity in Christ. Like you said, to understand that you are his son first. And so what does that mean? That means you're royalty, man. And I know like sometimes like when people hear that, they get uncomfortable and they want to like downplay that out of like a place of humility.
Sure.
But it's like, no, like we get to proudly proclaim that we are royalty. We're sons and daughters of the King. We're sons and daughters of the Most High. And so it's interesting how it almost to me, tell me if I'm wrong, Josh, but for me, as I'm kind of putting my therapy brain on here, it sounds like identity has kind of been a big struggle for you. And it started way back in high school that you know, girl absolutely broke up with you. So what does that tell you? One, that you're rejected, and two, there must be something wrong with you if she doesn't want to be with you, right? And right, that's
bro,
all the-
that's exactly it. You know, like I've spent like the band became such like a tool to try to fix that. You know what I mean? The whole time the Lord was away, but the band was like my tool to fix that. So even as early as a couple of years, I mean, as late as a couple of years ago, man, I was like looking at other bands obsessively every day, jealousy, rage, anger when other bands got, you know, got good opportunities and, you know, not seeing what the Lord has been doing for us at all. Just like, oh, well, they've got more Spotify listeners than we do. Oh, their YouTube video got more, you know, streams than ours did. And, you know, like just this constant comparison, like having to like feel like I have to prove myself to like even my family for some reason who are so proud of me and love me for who I am and what I'm doing. And man, living that kind of life is so hard. It's terrible when you feel like you do not measure up and you're trying to measure up and you can't because you feel like you're hitting this brick wall. And I think I just realized, man, like we could become as the biggest band on the face of the earth, you know, let's say we become bigger than the Rolling Stones, that problem's not going to go away, man. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I remember being in high school thinking, man, if we could just, you know, if we could just open for Disciple once, man, that'd be everything. You know what I mean? Now they're our best friends and we've traveled the world with them. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I remember seeing Skillet in high school thinking like, man, if they could just like, if I could just meet those guys. And then, you know, fast forward 10 years later, my brother's playing drums for Skillet and, you know, he's saying our name from stage every night. Like, you know, the Lord has blessed me as a human being, blessed the band immeasurably. It's just hard to see that when you're in that realm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, oh yeah, for sure, man.
Yeah. So I've just been really working on, you know, realizing like, you know, cause the band may not last forever. You know what I mean? Like the business may not last forever. Like those things are temporal, man, but I'm a child of God, and that I'm Josh Bramlett, and I have a story, and we all have stories, and that's something that will be there when everything's stripped away, you know. So it's important for me to find who I am in Christ, you know, and that's a journey that I'm currently on right now, and it's been really awesome.
Yeah. That's so incredible, man. What, for anyone listening to this, and maybe they're struggling with identity, maybe they're struggling with seeing their value and seeing their worth, and you know, they're caught up in that comparison game. And I always tell clients, and I work with clients, that whenever we play the comparison game, we never win. That is always Absolutely. A losing game, right?
Absolutely.
And so, Josh, to anyone who is struggling with any of those things, what advice, what encouragement would you want to give them?
Sure. I mean, man, it's kind of like preaching to the choir sometimes, you know what I mean? Because these things go through my head still sometimes, but I would say this, and this is for, you know, this is for anybody. So take it in that realm, but I'm going to come at it from, you know, what I know, which is being a musician and being in a band, you know, what the Lord has you doing is special for what you are doing. You know what I mean? If the Lord has called you to something, man, like, you know, like the Lord's called you to do this podcast, like you were doing it, your spirit for the Lord, you doing it and you being obedient is going to be different than someone else's obedience and their type of podcast. So like you were going to reach someone that, you know, others can't reach. And, you know, like, I think for me, it's been big to just see like, okay, the Lord's called me to this. So big or small, like that's it. You know what I mean? Like my only competition now I'm trying to make is how can we make our music better? How can we reach people better instead of, man, what's this other band doing? Like, oh, we want to try to be a huge band, all this stuff. Like that's just a lot of pressure to put on yourself. You know, if you're called to do it, then just seek the Lord and do what he's calling. And I'm serious, man. I'm not saying like you're going to be blessed beyond measure financially or fame standards or whatever. But if you are committing your work to the Lord, whatever that is, and you are doing what he's called you to do and you're reaching people, you will have success. It may not be success that looks good on paper, but you will. I mean, just like you said, man, you have no idea who listens to your podcast. You know, you have no idea who, you know, you just being obedient and doing this, you know, has reached people. So I would just tell people, just, you know, look what the Lord has for you, you know, because he has called you to it for a reason. Your heart is going to make a difference differently than someone else's would.
Yeah. That's great, man. That's great. I tell clients all the time, you know, sometimes we just got to put the blinders on so we can focus on our race. You know, God hasn't called Absolutely. Us to run, you know, he hasn't called me to run your race, Josh, and he hasn't called you to run mine. You know, right. He's called us to run our own.
Right.
Go ahead.
Oh no, dude. And no, but you're 100% correct. Like that's the beauty of it. Like, yeah. Like I couldn't run your race, man. Like you're so talented and gifted in this realm. I don't know how to freaking do video podcast stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so like you are reaching, yeah, like you're running your race and reaching people the way God has you doing it. And I think that's 100% a great way to look at it for people is like run your race, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, finding the beauty in it, you know, like we live in a world where so many people try to copy the other person and social media has a big deal with that. But like we're prototypes, right? Like we're one of ones. We're only going to be here once. And when God calls us home, we ain't coming back, right? We're not coming back until he comes back. And so let's authentically be ourselves and show off the glory of God while we have the opportunity to do it instead of trying to be a poorer imitation of somebody else that's already being Absolutely. Their authentic self, right?
Yes.
So I thank you, Josh, yeah. for being your authentic self and for sure. Just being so open.
Well, you know, man, everyone's got a different way to do things. Like this happens a lot to me where, you know, cause when you're in like a faith-based rock band, you play with a lot of the same bands a lot. And, you know, this happens a lot to me at shows. Like it happened last weekend, you know, we go on after Chaotic Resemblance, which you know them, right?
Oh yeah. Yep.
You know? Yeah. And then we go on before Kevin and Disciple, and you've got two of the most gifted evangelists in the world on either side of the protest. Brilliant speakers, brilliant people who are true evangelists. You know what I mean? I'm not sure, like, my gift is evangelism. My gift is to see lives changed for Jesus. But I guess my approach is just different. Like, you know, I'm not super eloquent when it comes to the gospel message, but I guess my goal is to come at it from like an honest, open point of view of a guy that sins and falls short and has struggled. Like, you know, like I can say all the scripture, but if there's someone out there in the crowd that doesn't know who Jesus is, then that's not going to do much good. You know what I mean? I mean, so I don't know, like the word of God doesn't come back void. So I know that, you know, even what I do from stage, even though it's not as beautiful or eloquent as the next guy, you know, everyone's got their own approach and their own take. And that's what makes it so cool in this brotherhood, is just the, you know, being co-laborers, reaching people for the gospel in different ways, you know.
For sure, man. For sure. Yeah. God has given you your own unique ability to communicate his word to people. And yeah, instead of comparing yourself to Kevin or Chaotic, you know, to just find the beauty in the fact that God is using you and working through you.
Right.
And what a gift, man. What a gift.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, man, it's just cool to see how God is using you and the band. And man, protests. So you guys first came out with your first album, Game Changer, back in 2012. And man, what a bold title for a first album, right? Game Changer. Like,
yeah.
What was that like, man? Once you, I mean, we've talked about, this has been your dream to be a rock star, now to be a rock missionary, right? And so to finally get your hands on an album that has your band's name on it and your work on it, what was that like for you?
Yeah. First of all, naming the album Game Changer was really funny, because like some of the reviews, you know, early on, we sort of set ourselves up for failure because like it was such a bold thing. And some of the reviews are like, this is a good record. Definitely not a game changer, but you know what I mean? But no, man, it was huge. Like we named it Game Changer because up until that point, we were kind of dabbling in whether we were going to be a mission-based band or not. We kind of were, kind of not. We went down to the studio with a different band name even than the protest. But we went down and it was like a total rebirthing. Like we decided to, like we all decided to, like we, it's crazy what the Lord does. He was working in all of our lives separately at the time. And it all kind of came to a head and we're like, man, let's do this, dude. So we changed our band name. We went down to Knoxville and recorded with Travis Weirich, you know, and at the time he was like, you know, POD and Pillar and Disciple. And, you know, I mean, you know, we went all in, man. Like we sold tons of stuff. We did chores. We did chores for him to help make money for this record, you know? And to have, you know, a record in your hand is amazing. I got to give so much credit to Travis Weirich. He is like, we would not be the band we are today without his guidance. You know, if you've ever talked to anyone that's been with Travis, they will say he's like intense. Okay. He's like, it's kind of like band boot camp. You know, he's the best dude ever, a great friend of mine till this day. But when you're recording, he wants to get the best out of you. You know, we went in there as green could be, excited, but green. We had our passion. We knew nothing about like writing music really and doing all these things. And he, you know, he saw something in us. So I'll never forget, we set up because he wanted to see us play live before we recorded anything. So we set up in his studio and he got us hooked up. We we played, and we were kind of nervous to make mistakes, so we played the best we could. And he said, he didn't say a word afterwards, and he said, go to lunch. You guys don't want to be here, obviously. You don't care. You're not even passionate about your music. You know what I mean? He said, you know, you guys might want to rethink, you know, being in a band if you're going to have that attitude and not be passionate and all this stuff. So we went to lunch, a very silent lunch. I'm crying almost, you know what I mean? We go back. We play the same song again, even sloppier, but we gave everything we had. We gave everything we had because we're like, this is it. And then he said, okay, I can work with that. You know, so from that moment on, it was like band boot camp, man. My brother was testing the snare drum. Travis said, if you ever hit a snare that soft again, I'm going to kick you out of my studio and have Lester from Pillar come in and play your parts. You know what I mean? Like, so it was like band boot camp. And this whole time it was like so intense. But then as soon as he would turn off the console for the day, he'd give us a huge hug and say, man, I am so proud of you guys. You guys are like, you know, so all that being said, like Travis was a huge impact on the way we perform and play now. And, you know, having that first record was like everything, man. It gave us the confidence to be like, oh my gosh, like we're a decent band. You know what I mean? Like we can do this if we want, you know, we can try, you know? So yeah, man, that was huge.
Yeah, man. And you guys have come out with, I think, 3 records since then. And
yeah,
not just saying this because I'm talking to you, but I've loved every one of them. And I truly believe each one, like it's even better than the last one. And again, not saying that to puff you up, but just honestly, I just love what you guys are doing. And I love the message that you guys carry. It seems like, you know, as I've been kind of like analyzing a lot of the lyrics and stuff like that, what I really enjoy about your guys' music is that you are not ashamed to go after like attacking the enemy, so to speak, right? Like talking about how he attacks us, but man, like he can attack us and yeah, it's going to suck, but we're going to win in the end. So bring it on, right? Like there's this boldness to it. Like talk to us a little bit more about that. I mean, obviously, you know, we've talked about your story and how, yeah, the enemy has definitely attacked your identity throughout your life. So what has it been like to kind of put like your stories into songs that now empower others to recognize that through Christ, they can overcome the enemy's attacks too?
Absolutely. You know, man, I mean, music is such a good outlet for those feelings and stuff. And, you know, like I'm a passionate person, but, you know, like, you know, somewhat meager in ways. You know, I've never been in a fight. I never caused fights. I never, you know what I mean? I'm a nice guy sort of. I don't really like, I don't want to fight or I hate confrontation, but you know,
you're a lover, not a fighter.
Yeah, totally. And trust me, if I got in a fight, I'd probably get my butt kicked. Cause I've never been in a fight. I don't know. I've never punched someone in the face or been punched in the face. I hope I never do. But yeah, so like, you know, going through all the things that I've gone through, but being kind of like a meager person, you know, like I am, like, you know, I don't want to say rage. It's not rage, but you just let out those frustrations toward the enemy through music. You know, I mean, that's what I do. And that's like how I battle, you know, standing up in his face. And you know, we want to encourage people to do the same, you know, something that we've really tried to turn the corner on, and there's nothing wrong with this. But a lot of music, especially Christian rock music, is very like, oh, I'm going through all these things, which it's important to have those songs. You know what I mean? It's very important.
Yep.
But I think something's kind of turned for us is like, we want everything we do to be like victorious. You know what I mean? Like, so even if there is pain in the songs, because we all have pain, and that's so true, but we want every song we do to be like victorious, kind of, because like the battle has been won, right? So, you know, we want, when you see us live, we want you to feel leaving encouraged. When you hear our music, we want you to feel like, you know, you're leaving encouraged. Like, I guess for us, like, you know, we're not the most technical band. We're pretty meat and potatoes, hard rock, metal, you know, for us, it's like, we want it to be like WWE. We want the protest to be like that band that is like doing your walkout themes for fighting the battles. You know what I mean? So
I love it.
Yeah. So that, I think that's kind of like where we've sort of found our little niche, is like having that like slight like victory feeling in everything we do. And that's, it's important to us because it's like, it's a reminder, man. Like, you know, we need to realize that he's overcome and we are victorious, you know? So, I mean, our songs are just a big reminder to us as they are to our listeners. Like Greater, you know, you write a song like Greater, you have to live up to that, man. Like,
yeah.
If I say that I am not doing it for the money or the fame, I have to believe that. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You kind of check yourself, you know, writing music. You're like, am I living this? You know?
Right. No, I love it, man. I mean, like I said, I'm so passionate about people knowing their identity in Christ and with that, the victory they have over the enemy, because I've been, you know, so attacked throughout by the enemy throughout my life. And to listen to you guys, it is a great encouragement to me. I even have a playlist called To Hell with the Devil, obviously named after the Stripers song. And I got a ton of your guys' songs on there because it's just a playlist of songs that remind me that, yeah, I am victorious over the enemy, that Jesus working through me. I mean,
right.
The war is already won, right? The war is already won and Jesus is going to help me fight and win the battles. Absolutely. On the way to the ultimate victory. Absolutely. And so, man, you guys came out with Dying Breath is the latest single. It's been out for a little while now. Man, tell us about the message behind that. I think it came out last August or September, and it has been steadily in my rotation since then. What's the message behind Dying Breath?
Oh, dude, it definitely, just being totally transparent again, and I know the guys won't mind, you know, it came from a place of like major difficulty. Like, okay, here we are. We're in our 30s. Like, it's getting harder and harder to do this ministry every single day. It's getting harder and harder. You know what I mean? There's so many roadblocks and so many, you know, attacks from the enemy and so many things. You know, this song is like, hey man, like, until the Lord calls us home, tells us to do something else, you know what I mean? Or whatever, then we're going to proclaim his name till the wheels fall off. Like, there's nothing that the enemy can do. If the enemy rips down our band, we, you know, the rocks will cry out, you know what I mean? I mean, we will cry out, like, you know, like, the Lord doesn't need the protest for anything. You know, we are humbled to get to do what we do. The Lord doesn't need us, but it's so cool that he uses us, you know? And I think for us, it's like, you know, we won't be quiet. We won't apologize for what we say. You know, there's a time where it was like, well, we want to make sure that we appeal to mainstream too, and you know, so we can make a break in mainstream and stuff. And I'd still love to make a mainstream break, but at what cost? You know, I mean, like, I'm not gonna stop talking about Jesus from the stage. I'm not, you know. So I think it was just kind of like us coming to terms with like, hey, this is what we do, and we're gonna bury our heads and do it until the Lord says otherwise. You know what I mean? So it was like kind of like a, like, because honestly, man, like, not that there were some death rattles, but we had some very hard conversations the last year, like really hard conversations. Like, we, like, what are we doing here, guys? Like we have families, we have this, we, you know, like, we have guys that are kind of feeling burnout. We have, you know, guys like me who are like, who became too obsessive and too controlling, and, you know, so it was a lot, you know what I mean? And so the song's really cool because it kind of takes all of that, puts it into, you know, music. And I'll say this, man, like, the stuff that we're writing now and the shows that we're playing now, it's like, I know for me at least, it's been like a breath of life, man. Like, it's been so much fun and so amazing. So I'm really excited to see what the future holds. There's definitely some more music coming out soon. So
I was going to ask about that. Usually, you know, when a band comes out with a single, usually there's more on the way. So Sounds like we can expect some new music in the not too distant future.
Yeah, we're very slow. Like we should, you know, we should have put out a single already. You know, we wanted to have a record out by now, but you know, things don't always work that way in the music biz because time and money. But yeah, we've got some songs done. We're heading back down at the end of this month to lay down a banger. And you know, we'll see. Like, I think you can definitely expect a full record sometime. You can definitely expect singles sooner than the full record. And you might even be able to expect some ways for fans to help. So just kind of be looking out for that. You know, this will be our first independent record in 2 years. And 6 years. So, wow. Yeah. So, you know, it's exciting and new territory. I'm learning a lot. You know, the people at Rockfest were so amazing and so good to us, and they're such hard workers. You know, and we still love them greatly. I think we were just ready to try something different. You know what I mean? So you realize pretty quickly, wow, they did a lot of work for you. Cause like, there's a lot of things that like I've had to learn and kind of take over. Cause they're just amazing at their job and so organized. So, you know, major props to Rockfest Records. I love them so much. I love that Seventh Day is on Winter Jam right now. They deserve it so much. They are some of the best human beings on earth. Love the label, love the bands on the label, great people. But yeah, we're excited to try this thing on our own for the first time in a long time and see how it goes.
Yeah, that's exciting, man. That's exciting. And man, this has been just, like I said, just such an incredible privilege to get to talk to you, Josh, and to just kind of further, you know, build this relationship here. And, you know, as we bring it to a close, man, I want to go back to that moment on the bench. And, you know, that was a defining moment that we talked about of you really coming to Christ. And as you have been, like we talked about, that process of sanctification and coming over suicidal thoughts and depression and anxiety and all these things, what is your relationship with the Lord like now?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's funny. Now it's taken on some other elements too. You know, I have a daughter now, you know what I mean? And she's only 1.5, but, you know, it's time. As soon as they're born, it's time to know, to share with them who Jesus is and that they're loved so much. You know what I mean? So that's been a big dynamic for my personal, relationship. It's been a lot more vulnerable, man. I've learned more things about myself as an adult and like kind of what works and what doesn't and what makes, you know, the Lord's always there, but you know, I mean, there are certain things that kind of help you feel closer to the Lord. You know what I mean? So, for me, I found out that when I'm really, praying hard and really in a season of prayer for something, it helps me to like literally go to the altar at my church, when no one's there, or, you know what I mean? And just sit in the darkness and pray and listen and wait. You know, I've never been good at that. I've never been good at waiting and being patient. You know, I talk to God a lot, but waiting for his answers, I'm not good at. But that's something I've been really doing, just being more intentional with my time. You know, in the mornings, I'm trying to start every day with Jesus instead of rolling out of bed and looking at my emails, you know, just things like that. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of it is like, there is a, you know, obedience factor to having a relationship with the Lord. Not that it's a relationship built on, you know, only rules and only, you know, practices. That's not the case at all. But for me, you know, having obedience and, you know, making sure that I'm spending time with the Lord always helps, obviously, you know, with my mental health too. Like, I mean, just, you know, I never leave a Bible study or leave listening or reading his word. I never leave those situations feeling worse than I came in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to be more intentional with my time with the Lord, spend more time with him. I'm a very, very busy guy, extremely busy. But that is no excuse at all, because the most important thing is spending time with him. So I've been learning how to make sure that happens, because that sets the trend for your day and in your life. You know what I mean? And I just really am feeling his, you know, since I've sort of started to accept who I am in Christ, I'm really feeling that from him. He's always been pouring it on me. You know what I mean? I just haven't been receptive to it. You know what I mean? So feeling that is really cool. You know, I'm having some peace now, like, which I thought my whole life I would never have any kind of peace. Like, I still get anxious. Yeah, I get super anxious and super depressed. Trust me. And I still have those moments. But like, I'm feeling periods of like peace and being content, which is like feelings I'm not used to, man. Like I'm a hard worker. I like to push forward, which is a good thing. But like being content with what the Lord has done and what he's done for you and, you know, is huge. And feeling those feelings has been amazing. So I'm so happy to be kind of like accepting those feelings finally. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. As you were talking, I was just getting a picture in my mind. It's like God is trying to clothe us with like royalty and righteousness. And I think sometimes like we just get stuck in our own minds as far as like, I'm not worthy. I can't put those clothes on. And he's just like, it's not about what you feel. It's about what you are. And so I love that you're getting to that realization, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to put it, man. It's not what you feel, but it's what you are. And I love that. That's so true. And I hope everybody, can glean that from this conversation. You know what I mean? It took me a long time to figure that out, you know, and I'm still working on it, but, you know, everyone has a gift to use for the Lord. Everyone is unique and special and beautifully made. So I just pray that, anyone listening, to your podcast or our band ever gets that.
For sure, man. Well, last question, Josh, as you look back at everything we talked about and you reflect on how God has just gotten you to this point that you're at now, and you think about the goodness of God, what comes to mind?
Man, like all of it, man. Like the fact that I'm still here, you know, I didn't think I'd be here, you know? There's a time where I thought I would be dead, you know? So the fact that I get to be here, the fact that I have a beautiful family and get to be used by him is, you know, on my darkest days when I'm doubting and hating my life the most, that's something that like is always going to be there. You know, like, wow, the Lord is using me. Like that's everything. And then you look back on some of the things he's done. And I was so caught up in so many stupid things and so many things in my mind that at the time I missed so many amazing things that the Lord was doing in my life and the Lord was using us for. I didn't celebrate those times. It was on to the next mountain to climb to become better and greater for myself, you know? So I guess now that I've become this, working on becoming this new person of like accepting who I am in Christ and stuff, I'm able to look back with no regret and no feelings like, well, we could have been this, we could have been that. Like, you know, I look back and like, man, I can't believe that. I can't believe we got to do that. I can't believe this happened to that person. I can't believe that person said that this song saved their life, you know, changed their life. I can't believe that anyone would ever say that about anything that we did, you know? So God is just so good, man. And that's what I'm trying to really, hold on to and reflect upon now, because I was so negligent of that my whole life.
Yeah. Well, Josh, I'm glad you're still here too. I'm genuinely so glad you are here because you have value. You are of immense value. You have immense worth in the kingdom, and God is using you and the band in mighty ways. I had the privilege of seeing you guys for the first time live back in August in Little Isle, Minnesota. And man, you guys brought the energy. You guys brought the energy. You guys brought the passion. You guys brought the word. And I certainly hope that's not my last time getting to see you guys live. Hopefully you'll come to Minnesota again here soon. Absolutely. But speaking of that, Josh, how can people follow you? How can people follow the band and get all the updates to what you guys are working on?
Yeah, man. You know, we're not cool enough and young enough to be in the TikTok world. We kind of missed that boat a little bit, but we're definitely Instagram, Facebook guys. You can find us on there easily. For music, we're on all the streaming services out there. And I guess the best place to go would probably be our website, theprotestrocks.com. That's got our merch store. That's got our tour dates. That's got all of our stuff. So
awesome. I'll link that all in the show notes. So you guys can find it really easy. And then Quiet Strength. Give a plug for that as well. Again, I can't speak highly enough about it, and just being able to work with you and Jarib, it was an amazing experience. How can people get in touch with you guys to get some work done?
Yeah, man. That's a great question. So we too have a Facebook and Instagram. So you can always hit us up there. Our email is bramlett.quietstrength@gmail.com. So if you ever want anything done, logos, gig posters, album art, t-shirts, whatever, we would love to be your guys. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, Josh, again, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. Let's stay in touch, man.
All right, Terry, thank you so much, my man.
Well, man, I know Josh's story is speaking to someone out there right now. And if you're listening to this and you've struggled with suicidal thoughts or mental health struggles, Josh's testimony is for you. See, testimonies prophesy. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So what God did for Josh, he can do for you as well. Your life is worth living, and it doesn't have to be a constant struggle. You know, Christ came to set the captives free, and you can experience that freedom today. Make sure to check out The Protest and check out the show notes to follow them and see if they're going to be coming to a city near you, because guys, if they are, I promise you, you're going to enjoy their show. They're full of energy, passion, and you can just tell that they're having fun doing what they're doing. And I seriously can't recommend Quiet Strength Design enough. If you guys are needing logo or branding work done, Josh and his brother Jarib are your guys. You absolutely won't regret working with them. You can follow me on all the Testimonies with Terry social media pages, and please make sure to share this podcast with a friend and leave those 5-star ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That's the best way that you can support this podcast. I'll be back next week with another testimony, but in the meantime, remember, your story matters. Share it to glorify God and weaponize it to kick Satan's butt.